The settlement process is not exactly an easy process. And all of us who've been through it know that we have our low days and high days. One of the most important parts of the settlement process is knowing that you're very good at English, but you cannot be understood, or probably that you cannot understand what people around you are saying. For new migrants, there is hope. We have an excellent service funded by the New Zealand government with very able ESOL advisors manning it that will help people like you and me to get through that initial painful process of settlement as far as English goes. Today we have an amazing person who's been working in this sector for a long time, who's got experience, who's got the cultural competence, and who's got the understanding to work with new migrants and refugees, and has indeed helped a lot of people to through those initial difficult days of understanding what the New Zealand work culture is about, what the New Zealand settlement process is about, and a whole lot of other things which are not even remotely connected to English. Now, we have on today Angela Yatri, an ESOL advisor from the Auckland region, who we shall be interviewing. And I hope all you listeners out there can gain from her very insightful messages.
Welcome to Women's Voices, Angela.
Hello, nice to be on the program.
Great. Now, Angela, could you please introduce yourself briefly to our listeners?
Hello, listeners. My name is Angela Yatri, and for the last 5 years, I have been working at Auckland Regional Migrant Services over here at Three Kings, and in the role of English language advisor. The service is quite comprehensive in its scope, and I assess and advise people around how to upskill in English language in order to be able to settle effectively here in Auckland.
Now, before we talk about the service, Angela, I think our listeners would like to know a little bit more about you as a person. Tell us about your background.
Okay. So I am born in New Zealand, but I think I have quite a strong connection to the migrant community in that my grandparents were all Italian, and I married Shruti from India.
He's a very well-known artist here now.
I have quite strong understanding, I think, of the settlement, of the migrant reality, what's involved in moving from one country to another. And I appreciate that there are a lot of quite real challenges for many migrants. And I hope that I have quite a sympathy for people as they move from one country to another. I've also worked with refugee communities for many years.
Tell us a little bit about that work, because you are a professional with a huge range of experience in the ethnic sector. I have yet to meet someone who has really done that kind of grassroots work with particularly refugees as well as migrants. So could you please share some of that work with us?
I do have a secondary teaching and ESOL teaching background, but I moved beyond that into working with refugees. And New Zealand has a number of different types of refugee groups. I've worked with all of those refugee groups, but more specifically with our quota refugees. More specifically worked in the role of a coordinator of a volunteer group that gave secondary support to refugee students. So this job involved going into homes, and I think it's when you go into homes, as you were saying, Asoka, you do start to have a much clearer understanding of you know, the holistic range of issues that people bring with you. And I feel very fortunate and empowered in that, of course, I have also known migrants within a home reality. And, you know, I feel quite humbled to have learnt from those home-based experiences how real some of the issues are. And of course, heartened to know that many migrants bring with them an enormous range of skills and strengths.
Yes, but now, despite all these strengths, people do have major issues when they first come.
So they do.
Particularly if their first language is not English. So how would you kind of, from your experience, how would you rate that? You know, people here, you have a group of people who are extremely skilled and experienced, but when they come here, if they don't know English or if their level of English is quite low, you know, they have to start everything from new.
Yeah, Sukra, I think that probably the start point to respond to you around communication issues would be for everybody to acknowledge that English is a global language and therefore we all speak different Englishes. So it's from my experience, I have learnt that those migrants who come to New Zealand, even with, you know, including migrants with very high levels of English, will still often speak a different English from New Zealand English. And many experience real problems on telephone communication. And that makes that is a real problem for any migrant who is a job seeker. So when I talk to migrants, that'll be my start point.
Yes.
You know, to recognize that they're now in New Zealand and that they have a language learning gap. And we explore that, you know, we explore that New Zealand English is going to be different with regard to pronunciation. We often have a lot of fun in our employment workshops as we explore the differences around word stress, and we understand that some people will pronounce the word photography, you know, that in Auckland we say photography.
Yes.
That other people will say photography, and that on the telephone the New Zealander is not likely to understand
what the other person,
so
what the
small
other person
issue
saying.
But can really be a real constraint when it comes to having an effective conversation with a recruitment agent or HR person or an employer.
What other examples can you give, Angela?
Well, another very strong constraint around understanding New Zealand English is, of course, around the very many local words and expressions that we have here in New Zealand. Mumbai English, for example, will have its own Mumbai range of words in Hindi as well as English.
And Beijing English will be different.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, London English is different. And
oh, yes.
You
and
know,
the,
and so it goes on and on. But Auckland English is extremely different. I always ask people, for example, if they know, I often ask people if they would know what a yachty is. And they very often don't. And then we discuss this and we come to understand that, you know, Auckland is the city of sails, that many people have yachts in New Zealand, and that therefore, in Auckland at least, and that therefore a person who sails a yacht is a yachty.
A yachty.
And
yes.
People start to understand from this that so much language actually comes out of what's happening in a city. You know, who's... You know, it comes out around the issues of cities, and you know, the realities of cities vary from one city to another, and therefore so does the language.
Yes, it's exactly. And even within Auckland, now having worked in central Auckland in a migrant environment and, learning a lot of New Zealand English, I've had a major culture shock because I've recently moved to South Auckland for work. And now I have to learn Cook Island English and Samoan English and Maori English, which is quite different.
Absolutely. I mean, I find that when I discuss this issue of different types of Englishes, people do start to understand that they might actually have a language learning gap, a language gap here. We talk, for example, about the fact that different generations speak a different type of English. And we talk about teenagers in New Zealand who speak a language that very few people can understand other than teenagers. But we point out that, you know, the workplace might include teenagers, or teenagers might be customers.
Yes.
And therefore, people need to open up and understand that even if they had very good English back there somewhere, there may be gaps. And the exciting thing is that we have English providers here in Auckland who have identified the specific and different needs of language learners, and we have English classes, cheap part-time English classes with titles such as G'day Mate.
Yes.
And you know, the focus of those classes is on giving a quick crash course around local English, and this can make such a major difference in terms of effective communication in both the job search area and also, you know, social communication over the fence with the neighbor, with your teacher, with everybody.
Yeah, with the kids'
yeah,
friends, and
exactly.
I think of it as a constant learning curve.
I would totally agree with you there, Asoka.
Because you could start, you could come from Mumbai, start getting accustomed to New Zealand job search English, and then you move into a workplace, and the workplace, if it is a corporate environment, it's a completely different lingo. If it is a social service agency, then the lingo would be different, you know.
Yeah,
and it depends on where the workplace is situated, probably, or the type of people that are in it. So I see it as a completely, something that's always new and keep on improving or changing, evolving.
Absolutely. And I mean, as a New Zealander, we have to actually appreciate that language is a constantly evolving phenomenon, and all of us have to be prepared to be, as you say, you know, always on a learning curve. So, and I think it helps migrants to know that, you know, we share the need to be always open to learning. It does sound, Asoka, as if you might be sort of, when you mentioned, you know, the English in specific occupational workplaces, that maybe this might be the time to look at English for job seekers.
Yes.
Angela?
Yeah.
You know, the journey that a new migrant faces, I mean, that whole journey from the time he comes into this country and then moves on to a more secure job. What, in that continuum, how much, I'd like you to explain to our listeners your contribution, because I see your contribution as extremely important in that initial settlement phase.
I'm very grateful that the government actually employs somebody to, first of all, help new migrants or even a longer-term migrant to understand what their language reality is. And that is something we arrive at through an assessment process. It's a very informal and assessment process, not one that's intimidating, but its function is to help people understand give them a realistic understanding of whether they have the English that they need for whatever they want to use it for here in New Zealand. Sometimes it might be a mum who just wants to talk with her teachers, with her children's teachers more effectively. Sometimes it's somebody who wants a very skilled professional occupation, and we will help them to have a better understanding of whether they have the job search and workplace communication skills required for that high-level position. I think when you are new in New Zealand, you may not be aware of what is required, just as I wouldn't be aware if I went to Mumbai and I wanted to be a teacher in Mumbai. I would not be aware of what language communication, of the language communication skills required. So I think the folk, I'm thinking of your question here, Corinne, I hope I'm answering it. If what I'm understanding is that, you know, the different phases of the migration pathway, when you arrive, you need a lot of guidance because you don't know standards here, local standards, and you don't know what's available to, you know, what provision, language provision is available to help you develop and overcome those gaps that you might have.
Yes, and it's at that point, you might be the best professional, but you do need a guiding hand on one of those things. I realize that many of us coming from countries like India don't have sufficient customer service skills, for instance, or customer service English. So a person like you who could guide people into the right kind of courses is really, really critical. And I'm hoping that people realize how critical your role is and that they do come to you in that instead of wasting time in those precious months that they enter the country. And that's exactly why I wanted you to explain what you do in those first initial settlement phase with new migrants. Now, I'd like to ask you...
Could I just comment here for a moment, Karen?
Yeah.
I think you're making a very good point here. We know, for example, that job seekers are often not getting the job that they want because they haven't analysed the level and the type of communication skills required for particular jobs. And getting a job is all about a very effective match between your, you know, the applicant's skill set and what's required in that job, you know, what the employer is looking for. And I think our service can help people to do that matching a lot more effectively. So, yeah.
And I'd like you to also give a few examples of how you've made that difference for people, and how I know that you've made that difference, because there are many people who passed under you who've gone on to good jobs, or rather happy that they are secure and happy in whatever they're doing. And I'd like you to comment on a couple of those cases that you've helped pathway.
Okay, well, look, just this morning I've worked with a primary teacher from India, and we've done a little bit of analysis around her communication skills. We discussed her background, and we discussed that, and she identified that she did want to have a teaching role here in New Zealand. So I was able to sort of point out to her that that primary teaching in Auckland requires the very highest levels of English, because after all, you are actually teaching students English language. She was somebody who has always used Telugu in her work environment, and so she actually is quite limited in her English language fluency at this point. So I've suggested that she do a whole year, for 2008, it's to focus on English language, and I've suggested to her that by the end of the year, she might in fact be positioned to move into early childhood education teaching. We've sort of discussed the fact that that may be a more realistic path, you know, teaching pathway option than primary teaching. But, you know, we've left that open. We've left the actual employment goal open, because we know that, first of all, English needs to be focused on. And I was able to point out to her that there are free classes, free full-time classes here in Auckland. So she's very pleased to know about that.
Thank you very much for that example, Angela.
Yeah, and what I feel is that you can actually not only assess and advise, but also make realistic, create an environment where you can give realistic advice, which is really good.
Well, as you know, Asoka, we now have had many years' experience in seeing the connections between language and employment pathways, and bring into, and also thirdly, be able to bring in a pretty good understanding of some of the access and family and economic issues that we need to also work around when we're offering advice. So, and now, it feels very helpful, as you say. I think this kind of advice is what stops people going around in circles.
Yes, exactly. Now, Angela, since we haven't got too much time, could we talk a little bit about workplace English? Now, when someone gets a job, they may not get the job of their choice. They may move into any job. But what are the issues that are found in a workplace, and how can people think of moving into something better? And what is the English required for that? Can we
When I talk to migrants about communication skills for the workplace, I divide the focus into two. And I say that the very first thing is that we have to make sure that they have the communication skills related to the specific job that they would like to get. And we do quite a lot of analysis around that. And if we look at the admin area, we can get a very good example. We can say, for example, that there is a difference between the communication skills required for a back office admin person, where you will need, where the focus will be on data entry and maybe general word processing, and you will maybe just have to be able to talk only with your colleagues. And the communication level is less than what would be required for a receptionist general admin position, and because that receptionist is going to have very good telephone skills. And the point that is made is that very critical when it comes to workplace communication skills, that you make sure you have the skills, the communication skills, for the tasks you will do for specific jobs. And so there needs to be an analysis around that. So moving on from that, the other aspect of workplace communication is around what's often called interpersonal skills.
Yes.
On a CV. And people are very quick to claim that they have very effective interpersonal skills. But in fact, employers point out that this is an area that all migrants need to know they will need to develop capacity in, this area of interpersonal communication. Because if we take a couple of examples, we are talking about interpersonal means communication between two people, two colleagues, or maybe a team of colleagues. And we can think of team meetings, or we could think of a situation like disagreeing with your colleague. So we could think of a situation like disagreeing with a colleague in a team meeting. And that's an example of an interpersonal communication task. And what we know is that there's a very strong New Zealand cultural aspect to this. And if somebody goes into a New Zealand workplace and doesn't really know how to disagree with a colleague in an acceptable New Zealand way, they really could do that quite incorrectly.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's one example of why I'm really happy that in Auckland we also have English for employment courses, either free courses or maybe part-time but very cheap courses in community education, and they focus on helping people understand that workplace English is New Zealand, is embedded in New Zealand, in the New Zealand cultural workplace, and it's the fact that people haven't worked in New Zealand, which means that they very often don't know how to be effective around communication.
Yeah, totally agree. Now, Angela, before we wind off, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time, almost the end of our time. Mm. Before we wind off, could you tell our clients how they can contact you and whether there's a charge for your service?
No, we're very pleased to identify that we are funded by the New Zealand government, so no charge for our services, and the normal appointment process is to actually ring through to our reception desk, 625-2440, and generally the reception staff will make appointments. We do need to see people through an appointment process, because we will probably spend at least an hour or so with each client, and it just doesn't work for people to turn up.
And you can see people who have any immigration status, is it?
Yeah, yes, we can offer our service basically to everybody, and we're very happy to be able to do that.
And before we wind off, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners, Angela?
Maybe something very positive. It's really exciting to know that if people do accept that they have a learning curve around communication, that there is provision in place to help them upskill, and there are strategies that we can offer to help people self-upskill. And people do improve their communication skills, which mean that they become more effective and more competitive job seekers, for example.
Thank you so very much, Angela. And that was Angela Yatri, English Language Advisor from the Auckland Regional Migrant Services.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, ladies.
Unfortunately, we don't have any community notices for today nor time. But please do email your community announcements at least a week before you want us to air them to womens.voices@hotmail.com. Or you can text me on 021-167-7475. That was all our time for today. It was great being with you, and we wish to thank Mrs. Angela Yatri, ESOL Advisor, for being with us today. Today's program was produced and brought to you by Asoka Basnayake and
Kiran Malapur.
We wish to thank our sponsors, the Office of Ethnic Affairs, whose assistance we value. Join us next week with Women's Voices. Until then, have a wonderful night.